Hey, please, the court. My name is Carrie Bader. I represent Arturo Torres-Castillo. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, I would ask that you reverse this conviction and vacate it completely. In this case, there was structural, fundamental error that violated Mr. Torres' right to a fair trial. First of all, there is jury misconduct. We have a juror who announced to the entire panel that she believes that since the government had this person here in federal court, that he had to have tried to come in illegally. She further polluted the process by commenting about her career criminal ex-husband. This was just the theme that she set forth that was perpetuated throughout the rest of the trial by the government witnesses through the trial. This amounts to structural error under the Cummings case. In Cummings, it's a little bit different. The district attorney announced to the jurors in closing argument that because the agents had come to him with a case and had convinced him essentially that the defendant was guilty, that this person before the jury must be guilty. The same holds for what happened with Ms. McIntyre, the juror.
You don't think there's a difference between a representative of the government making a comment like that and a juror?
It's worse because this happened at the beginning of the trial where all the panel members were there. She couldn't be cross-examined. She couldn't be investigated by the defense. She couldn't be rebutted. She could only be removed. The poison was already there. And then it was perpetuated by the agents who go on to talk about aggravated felons at least twice on airplanes when they get deported, and aggravated felons are deported at night. There was reference to a jacket. There's no reason on earth to pollute a trial with these terms. Mr. Torres was on trial for having been removed before, he tried to enter the country after he'd previously been removed. He was not on trial for his prior criminal activity or alleged criminal activity. And these comments were not even invited, as the government likes to say, by the defense.
Was there a timely objection at trial?
There were objections to the issues concerning law enforcement center, the repeated reference and the repeated questioning by the AUSA about the law enforcement center and why that was so important in Vermont. There were two, if not three, objections throughout that colloquy, and there was a request for a mistrial after that. It's incredible to believe that the defense is being accused of inviting this prejudicial testimony and not objecting to it. It was perpetuated even further, Your Honor, when the prosecutor asked the agent, Agent Webb, what happened to the driver of the vehicle? Mr. Torres was found
you're
in the trunk of the vehicle.
You're on a different subject. Excuse me, just slow down.
Okay.
I'd like to another subject. My understanding is that there were two jurors who made comments.
Two. I'm talking about Ms. McIntyre. The other one was retained onto the panel.
Wasn't one of the jurors removed for cause?
Ms. McIntyre was removed, but I believe that the damage was done.
And didn't the defense leave one of those jurors on the panel?
Yes, but Ms. McIntyre is the one who referenced, who opined to the entire panel that if the federal government had brought somebody here into federal court on trial, they must have something against them.
She was removed for cause.
She was removed. And she had also said that her ex-husband is a career criminal.
So your position is, regardless of the agent's later testimony as a witness, which is... You'll do a lot better if you let me formulate my question. I'm trying to sort out your argument. Because you started off talking about the jury, and then the next thing, you're combining it, as I understand, overall with the effect of the agent's testimony as a witness. Okay, so you've got juror taint plus a witness who then goes into what you consider to be prejudicial extraneous matters, correct?
Yes, originally in my papers, Your Honor, I separated the jury misconduct out from the government misconduct.
Yes, and then Judge Hawkins asked you if there was an objection. Now, was the objection, was there any objection or any motion to the jurors other than getting McIntyre removed for cause? In other words, what are we reviewing? What's our standard of review vis-a-vis the jury selection?
I would ask, she was removed for cause. She was questioned. The other juror, yes, was not objected to, Your Honor.
Okay, so is that plain error review?
It's a plain error, and the standard of evidence I would like you to use is in the extrinsic evidence I cited in the Keating case. If you could apply that, if there's a reasonable possibility that this trial was tainted.
Okay, so do we look at what happened during the course of trial? What's the relationship between the agent's testimony? Isn't that a standalone issue, or are you talking cumulative error, or what?
I originally briefed this as two different issues, but as I reviewed all weekend, I see it as cumulative error that has polluted this trial, and it made it so unfair for Mr. Torres. It was as if the jury was being told, this is a career criminal, he's come in illegally, he wouldn't be here.
And there was an objection to that testimony?
There was nothing to the career criminal, no. That was with the juror, because at that point, it was, if I dwell on it, then I magnify the problem. We did go sidebar with that particular juror, and we questioned her.
Where's the career? Who are you relying on for the career criminal aspect?
The juror who was removed.
Sure. Okay, fine.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. The juror who was removed made the comment about the career criminal, a term of art that we all know under armed career criminal statutes. And she also...
We don't know. Does the jury know that?
I don't know, but it has the alliteration has a very powerful effect. These jurors are not stupid. They're very smart, and they can pick up on all these subtleties.
You don't think that they can sort things out, knowing that just because somebody in the voir dire panel makes a dumb remark like that they can't live up to their oath to follow the instructions and the like?
They may well be able to, but they may well not be able to.
Okay,
what you would like us to do
is, in this case, essentially say, if some juror makes a statement like a career criminal, then everything goes from scratch, regardless of whether or not there's an immediate motion for mistrial or anything else.
I think if you just had the one comment,
yes.
The one comment.
Okay.
We could probably...
Well, what are the other comments?
Her other comment was essentially, I'm synthesizing it in my own words, the government would not have brought somebody here to trial unless they had something on him, which is just like the Cummings case.
You don't think the jurors say
vouching.
Things like that? They say, well, I don't think I could be fair on this jury because I don't believe that the government brings cases against people who are innocent.
It's a problem. Perhaps the whole panel should have been wiped out. But in this sense, it went on, and then regardless of what happened with that juror, she was gone, we had the infectious testimony of three agents.
Give an instruction that the fact that the party has been indicted is no evidence of guilt, and he gives that, and was the court, when this juror made the remark, asked to tell the jurors that to disregard that remark entirely?
Judge Jones admonished the jury.
He did that, yeah. So
I don't think it could repair the damage. I think after that came the comment. I think the career criminal came after that. And then, if you look at it from what Your Honor said, the cumulative error problem with the agents, not just one, but three different agents, each making innuendos and almost blanket assertions that since the driver of this car was not illegal or not too illegal, he lost his border crossing card and he went straight home that day. We deported him and he went straight home that day. The inference being that Mr. Torres must be a criminal, otherwise we wouldn't keep him here. Or he must have been deported before, otherwise we wouldn't keep him here as we let the driver go. I don't think this is a proper way to prove that somebody has been deported before. And I think it suggests, and it dovetails on the original assertions, that he's an aggravated felon, that he's got a jacket, that his jacket comes from the law enforcement center, the special one in Vermont. These are signals to the jury that we need to keep this guy out of here. And that's not an appropriate basis for a conviction, as we know. It's like the case with the convicted felon with a gun.
Yeah, you see, your time's up.
Okay, I appreciate that. Okay. Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Roger Haynes, Assistant U.S. Attorney in the Southern District of California, representing the United States today. Let me just address the issues raised by defense counsel. First, regarding tainting the jury, the judge immediately instructed the jurors, all the jurors, as soon as those comments were made about that the government would not have brought this case unless they had some strong evidence, the judge immediately instructed the jury that an indictment is not evidence, that the defendant is presumed innocent, and the comments of Mr. McIntyre and Mrs. O'Rourke therefore did not taint the jury. As the Court has already pointed out, Mr. O'Rourke was struck for cause, Mrs. O'Rourke, sorry, but the defendant did not strike Mr. McIntyre, the other juror she complains about in her brief, and he remained on the petty jury, suggesting that she thought that at least that juror could be fair. And therefore, if that juror could be fair, certainly, and he's the one who made some comments, certainly the rest of the jury also could be fair.
Was there any request when the judge removed the juror for cause? McIntyre?
O'Rourke.
O'Rourke, I'm sorry. When the one juror was removed for cause, was there any request from the defense to do anything further?
As far as admonishing the jury
or removing
the other juror?
Removing the other juror?
No.
Discharging the entire panel?
No. And, of course,
giving a different instruction?
No request for any other instruction. And, of course, if defense counsel is correct, that if a juror comments that I think the government must have strong evidence, that happens in a good many cases. If that were true and, therefore, you had to throw out the entire panel because of that comment, we'd never be able to try cases. In addition, defense counsel makes the argument that the same juror said her ex-husband was a career criminal. She somehow suggests the jury would have thought that that referred to the defendant, but the juror said that it was her ex-husband who was the career criminal. There was no comment about this defendant. So the bottom line is there was no taint of the jury. None of these comments would have had the slightest effect on the jury.
What about the cumulative error issue with the...
Well, on that, let me turn to the question of the questions to the various witnesses at trial. And cross-examination, defendant asked witnesses about the A file, and the witness responded, well, an A file is simply a file or a jacket. Now, to me, that means nothing. To defense counsel, it seems to mean that that's some sort of a criminal record. But if it does, even if some juror has in their mind that jacket might have a criminal connotation, in this case, the witness was referring to a civil immigration file. He said an A file is a jacket, is a file. He's talking about an immigration file. No suggestion that it was a criminal file. Similarly, there was a comment. Defense counsel was trying to do, as is done in most cases, to demonstrate that the witnesses had deported many people, therefore they all run together in one's mind, and we can't be sure that this was the alien who was deported. And to do that, she was asking, don't you deport a lot of aliens? Are they deported 24 hours a day? And the witness said, well, yes, but not aggravated felons, not after 7 o'clock. They don't like us to do that because they're dangerous people. He did not say this is an aggravated felon. He was simply explaining to the witness, to the defense counsel, what his job is. Some people are deported all the time. Some people are not deported till after 7 o'clock. She also said, do you sometimes deport them by airplane? Well, there was no evidence in this case he had been deported by airplane. And the witness said, well, yes, sometimes they're deported by airplane. Even ag felons, I think defense counsel said. And he said, well, ag felons are accompanied. Or are they accompanied on the airplane? I'm sorry, I misstated that. Are they accompanied on the airplane, suggesting, you know, maybe you're putting the public in danger? And the answer was, well, they're accompanied if they're ag felons. Again, no reference to this defendant. And comments that are completely responsive to defense counsel's questions. We think there was no error at all in this case, and the judgment should be affirmed.
So. Could I ask you about a different matter? There's an allegation with respect to the underlying deportation, or a claim, argument with respect to how the immigration judge handled that, that at the time the defendant appeared in that proceeding, it was on the record suggested, you can get some water if you like.
I'm fine.
That he was married and his wife to a citizen. There was no information given to him about possible Section 212 relief. What's your position on whether there was error there or what, and if so,
There was no error.
How do we get around that?
There's about three answers to that, Your Honor. First, an immigration judge, if the judge had known the facts of this case, certainly on the facts of this case, no immigration judge would have a duty to advise the defendant to marry the woman that he had been, who had been the victim of his domestic violence. Those are the facts of this case. And essentially, defense counsel is saying the case should have been continued in order for the immigration judge to tell this defendant that he should go and convince this woman that he had beat up, that she should marry him. On the facts of this case, it's an outrageous claim. But apart from that, the immigration judge did in this case advise the defendant that if his wife filed papers on his behalf, he might be eligible for relief from deportation. And the judge did that after the defendant had told her that he wanted to go back to Mexico, because she said, you know, do you have a wife? Why hasn't she filed papers? Defendant said, I want to go back to Mexico. That's when the judge said, well, if she files papers for you, then you might have a claim for relief from deportation. Now, why did the defendant, that's my third point is, why did the defendant say, I want to go back to Mexico? Because he had agreed to do that as part of a plea bargain in his earlier case. And the government's entitled to specific performance of that plea bargain. Defense counsel throughout this case has been essentially collaterally attacking a deportation that the defendant agreed he would not collaterally attack and that he would stipulate to. So there are three reasons why the judge...
I suppose, though, just to... If he had signed the plea agreement not knowing that he had the option based on his wife's status, then one could argue that the plea agreement was not knowingly entered into.
One could argue that, but one has not argued that in this case. There's been no attempt to set aside that plea.
Well, they were never married, were they?
And they were never married.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
On that point, Your Honor, I wish there were more time, but... The immigration judge specifically said to him, all in one paragraph, okay, all right, well, if you're married to a U.S. citizen, that U.S. citizen can make an application to get your legal documents, and if you've been married for 15 years, you could have been legal 15 years ago, okay? All right, now, it says here, let me ask you this first. Have you ever had any legal documents to be in the United States? Now, under the CFR...
Exactly the tone and space at which you did it.
I don't know about the tone. I don't have the tape with me.
Yeah, I don't either.
But that is...
So if he said those in measured, slow terms and didn't run into the next sentence as you did, then it may well have alerted him to the possibility he had some relief, right?
She never alerted to him. She said he could have done it 15 years ago.
I see.
She did not tell him what she is required to do under the CFR, under your own case law, Arrieta, and several other cases that I've cited, and under the statute, the INA statute, she is required to advise a person of his or her possible benefits, and she is not allowed to just gloss over it. She must pinpoint the respondent, the alien, as to what she has a duty to pin down the witness with the specific object of the questioner's inquiry. That's a Karani versus INS, 379 F3rd. She cannot obtain a waiver of his rights, based on a compound question. I would say this is a compound, these are multiple thoughts all in one paragraph, and it's far too confusing for somebody who's uneducated and certainly not a lawyer and does not know immigration laws or the duties or the rights that he has, that he could have applied for 212H. She never said 212H. She said never said the word waiver. She never said extreme hardship to your family. She never said you could do this now. She never mentioned Section 245.19 of the CFR, 8 CFR, that allows people to get married.
Was he
if it's bona fide.
Did he represent himself at that time?
Yes, he did. And notably, his wife, who he, despite the domestic violence conviction, the alleged conviction, which happened years before and was not even part of the deportation proceedings, it's not even in the record, not even there. I would say that's a further pollution of this process. But he, I'm sorry, Your Honor, what was your question? He could have been married. Under the statute is designed, I think it was promulgated in 1988, to prevent marriage fraud. It didn't stop marriages during deportation proceedings. It just said the alien has the burden of proving by a preponderance of the evidence that the marriage is valid. He could have easily done that. They had three U.S. citizen kids together. They'd lived together for years. That wouldn't have been a problem for him to prove that.
Maybe he didn't want to get married.
Maybe he didn't, but he had a right to be advised.
That he could get married?
She did not advise him of anything. Despite what may look like her good intentions, we don't know. It's not in the record. All we can deal with is the record and the law. And she did not advise him the way she was supposed to advise him.
All right. We have the picture.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Matter submitted.